Oh, I should turn it back to zero, shouldn't I? Right? No. Put the numbers back to zero. Okay.
Okay, you were talking about the retreat from Shenkhurst and being rear guard.
Yeah. We are leaving Shagabari now. Heading...
Yes.
North. Mm-hmm. So we got to Vistavka, a little town there where we stopped and held the Bolsheviks back there. We stayed there for a week, and I told you about Ray Durham coming up there with his rifle. There was a ravine there. And when they came up, he spotted this ravine, and the Bolos were coming down there. They had shelled that thing the day before. Oh, tremendously. They just obliterated the blockhouse that was there. And he stood up there on that hill, and these guys were coming in the ravine, and they came. And he kept mowing them down, he and another guy standing up there with their Lewis guns. Didn't take much infantry when those two guys were firing it as fast as they could go, you know. They had bandoliers, well, they're about that big around, you know, that attached the gun. I don't know how many shells there is, probably 100 or more. And here they were in this hollow. They couldn't run up the hill because we were on the other side of them. But as long as they were in that ravine, it was his job to knock them off, which he did. And after that, we kept slowly going toward the Arctic Ocean again, back toward Archangel.
When did you arrive in Archangel? About what month?
Well, I think the early part of June. Mm-hmm. Possibly the latter part of May. And we didn't go to Archangel. We went to some place just north of Archangel. I know we lived in tents there because it was June weather. And one of the early days in June, maybe along about the 10th, they had a big snowstorm.
Wow.
Okay. Before you were saying that when you first encountered the Bolsheviks that they were badly disciplined and they didn't know how to fight and that you could outfight them very easily. Did that change at all towards the end of your stay there?
Oh yes, tremendously, because you got all those trained troops that were relieved from doing the fighting in East Germany. Mm-hmm. The Eastern Front was no more. So when they made their separate peace, that's when we really got into trouble. We weren't fighting kids or, you know, guys that didn't know much. Then they were real soldiers with real equipment and everything.
So were you at Vistavska or Maximovskaya fighting there? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Do you remember how the Bolsheviks fought at all or anything about that battle?
That would have been in March.
Yeah, that was in about March.
Well, I think in March was when we were surrounded. I was just telling you about that, how we stopped. That's the retreat from Shankers.
When the other company rescued you?
There were other fellas, like over at Paniga or Oniga, which they might know the same things I know, but not the same story. It's the same kind of a battle all the way around, you know. The guys on the railroad, they were entirely different kind of a war than we had. They rode up back and forth in boxcars or some kind of cars, transportation. They had cannons loaded on flat cars. So their war was a little different from us guys who were over on the river. The Bolsheviks had gunboats on the river that could fire at us all the time, and they could outshoot the Canadian field artillery that was with us.
Okay.
They could be three times as far away and hit us, you know, as they could with their 3-inch guns that they had.
That sounds like it would be a serious disadvantage.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. What were your first impressions of Archangel when you got there finally?
I didn't see it.
Oh, you didn't see it.
I never was
it
in there.
Economy?
All I know Archangel, what I could see from the boat as it went by.
Oh, really? You just stopped at a... Bakarica and then
that's
up?
Right.
Okay.
We just passed Archangel and we went right across the river or across the bay there where this Bakarica was already there and they had that converted into some kind of a hospital where all the guys that were sick unloaded there. Then I presume when we were gone up the river maybe they transferred them over to Archangel. I don't know that they did or not.
Okay. When did you first discover that you were going to go home?
Well, I guess when we got back there north of Archangel. We had communications that we had seen where the Bolsheviks were going to drive us into the Arctic Ocean.
Uh-huh.
So fortunately, they had some boats there waiting for us. And we saw the boats as we came down there, so we knew something like that was going to happen.
You didn't know until you got to Archangel, though?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have any, did you feel like you hadn't finished what you were sent there to do at all? Or were you just glad to be going home?
I believe we all felt like that because we all felt we had no business being there in the first place.
Uh-huh.
I don't think anyone knows today purely, truly why we were there. Some Britisher's pipe dream. Although the thing about this establishing a submarine base up there in the North Atlantic probably had some merit to it, but the war had ended.
Mm-hmm.
Even before anything like that was started, it was just, you know, talk or paperwork or whatever.
So the whole time you were there, you felt like you had no business being there, especially after the
armistice? That's right. We felt more we were fighting for self-preservation, certainly after Christmas.
Uh-huh. Okay. When you returned to the States, what kind of reception did you receive?
We hardly received none, but there were. Half of the outfit came back 2 weeks before we did. And I guess they had a royal reception here in the city of Detroit. They were, I think, dying, and they marched around Belle Isle and up over to Abdo and had a good time here in the city. But when we came, we went right on. So we just stopped a half an hour down at the old Union Depot.
Got in too late, huh?
We had a few days in Boston, because when we came back, we landed at Boston Camp Devens. So Art Gallagher and I, we got took off, went down to visit Boston. We saw Bunker Hill and a few things over there.
Oh.
We went looking for strawberry shortcake. But we were too late. There was no strawberries left.
Oh, how come you stayed there longer than the other troops?
I don't know.
We just didn't get back to Archangel in time to leave with them or what?
We left Russia pretty much all together.
Oh, really?
You know, they wouldn't send you all out together just like going over there. We were miles apart, but there was 13 boats going to cross the Atlantic when we left here. And we had battleships and submarines, and you'd see them every once in a while running around. Guards supposed to be guarding us, you know.
Did you arrive at France about the same time? Camp Brest?
We landed at Liverpool.
You didn't go to France after Russia?
The rest of them, not everybody from the 85th Division went to Liverpool.
Oh.
I don't know exactly where they went. They went, maybe landed at Brest and then scattered out someplace in France.
Oh, so you just went to Liverpool, huh? Okay, after you got back, did many people around know exactly about the expedition? Or did a lot of people just kind of wonder where you'd been all this time or what?
Oh, I think at that time our war was probably looked upon as though nothing had happened, rather than what went through France and all that, you know. That had been going on for 4 or 5 years. And when we entered the war, I guess we declared war in 1916, I think. And we didn't get started until 1917. The first contingent that went over to Camp Custer for training was in August, because I went over there in September and I was 2 weeks late.
So what did people think when you got back? What did they think you'd be doing?
I can't remember that anybody thought anything special.
Mm.
I went back up home and had a good vacation up in Manistee, up on the shores of Lake Michigan, until September. The first September I came back to Detroit. And I was walking along Woodward Avenue one afternoon, and I met a fellow who I had worked with before I went to service. He was a foreman at the it's strange you can forget a name that's 60 years old.
Was it the automobile plant?
It was a plant where they started making the first airplanes were made right next door to that plant was turned into an airplane plant.
Oh.
that moved over to Willow Run before they started the airplane. Of course, this had nothing to do with the war. This was during peacetime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Harry Jameson was running this plant. He's out of remember that name. Anyway, they sold out to the Hudson Motor Car. So that plant was moved out to the Hudson plant. Clayton Lambert. Mm-hmm. That's who that was. And I worked there previous to going into service. In between, I worked at American Car and Foundry, making these bullet machines, too, shell machines. And he said, we visited and talked for a while, you know, they wanted to know a little about the war and so forth. He says, I got a shop of my own now. He and two other guys had started a shop that same month. And it, we happened to be right near Sullivan and Woodward. And he says, just around the corner there, they had started a little place above a garage on Sullivan Buck. Oh, two or three doors from Woodward. So he's come over and see us sometimes. So I did. About three or four days later, he says, well, you want to go to work? He says, we need some help. So I was their first employee. And that place today is known as Star Tool and Die Works, which probably is worth somewhere around 18, 20 million.
Anyway, what was his reaction when you told him about what you'd done in Russia? Was he ignorant of what had been going on?
Oh, no.
No, he knew.
Anybody who was in machine business would know something about the war because they had to make all the material for it, practically.
That's true.
Clayton Lamberts were making, when I worked there, they were making the nose piece that they put in the front of those big shells, a timer. You know, the shell goes so far, and then there's a mechanism in there that makes it explode at a certain distance out. This shrapnel, you know, it's that thick. And there's that powder and explosives inside. And this little timer was made out of brass that they made at Plato Lambert's.
Hmm.
It's sitting in the head, and that's set for how far they want to fire that shell. Then it explodes. That's shrapnel. Can come out chunks that maybe weigh 10 ounces, and some maybe weigh a pound.
Was the average soldier recognized for his bravery by the higher command?
There were some medals given out, and in some occasions given to the wrong person.
Yeah.
I guess that happens quite often. I know a couple of lieutenants got medals where it should have been a sergeant who was with them should have had the medals. Yeah, I knew Captain Ojard. He was the guy that worked for Detroit Edison before the war. And he got a medal from, it was the medal that the Tsar used to give out. Mm-hmm. Somehow or other, how they did it when we were there, the Tsar was already gone. But he has a beautiful medal that the Tsar used to give out. And he died in 1972, and the lady was his housekeeper. She's wearing it. Beautiful thing.
Looking back, what I suppose you've already answered what the purpose you felt the purpose was about the submarines and to guard the war supplies. And since in practice you were under the British command and you were doing different things, did that affect your feeling towards the British at all?
I think that created more bad feeling than probably anything else did. We even wore British clothes when our American clothes wore out. They had maybe a pants or a jacket, one or the other something else, you know. Did anybody ever tell you about the shackles and boots? Never heard about them.
I've heard that they were slippery.
Yeah, you did hear. Well, some guy named Shackleton was a discoverer. He was an explorer in Alaska, and he developed these boots to wear. They were nice and warm, supposed to be, you know. And so they sent them to us, and we gave up our hobnails, shoes, and we were supposed to wear these boots, which he just couldn't wear. Might have been all right for some guys exploring, you know, he could do what he wanted to, or whatever he wanted to, or what. But we couldn't fight with those things on our feet. Then they even sent us snowshoes one time. We had to learn to walk on snowshoes. And that petered out in a hurry. That went faster than the Shackleton boots.
So what did you end up wearing?
Got the little hobnails.
But you got this back.
Same kind of stuff we were over at Camp Custer. They were a little cold, but at least you could stand up with them. They were like wearing, they were about that long and as slippery as could be in the snow. That Shackleton boot. It was a nice warm shoe.
Just not practical.
The Russians had the right thing. They wore felt boots up to here.
Uh-huh.
Thick felt. Now, where in the world they got them, I don't know, but they would be half to three quarters of an inch thick. No shoes, just those felt boots.
Would you say that your experience in North Russia affected your outlook on life?
Well, I guess if you didn't appreciate this country then, before that, you certainly would after you'd been there. Because, now I have to say again that we didn't live in the good part of Russia. We lived with the peasants who were mostly not very well educated, probably couldn't read or write, most of them. I know older people that I would ask them sometimes what their age was, you know, and they'd give you some terrific figure, and they'd ask him again. He wouldn't tell you the same thing every time. He's so old, he's something anyway. And the kids the same way. I never saw a schoolhouse then. And then again, they didn't measure a town by the number of people like you do here. They measured it by the number of buildings that were there. How many houses, how many homes. So one home might have three or four kids, another one might have a half dozen, right? And the women weren't dressed at all like you see women here today. I never saw anyone in this country dressed like they were. Their skirt was just a piece wrapped around them and tied around the waist. The men wore fur coats, but it was a bear skin. The front legs were the sleeves, and it slipped down the belly and buttoned up. But we saw other guys that somehow or other came up from Petrograd or Moscow who were well-dressed. Nice, chinchilla coats and things like that, fur lined. Once in a while you'd see some person, a woman or two, that maybe somehow in their younger days got away and got down and come back for a visit or something like that. And then they were well-dressed, nice-dressed. I guess in the cities they probably weren't too bad off. But out where we were, out in the woods, they could make a clearing of, I don't know how many acres, maybe 15, 20 acres or more, and they had four or five houses. Out around the houses they would do their farming, right up to the edge of the woods. They'd have a head man of the village. He was called the starister, and he would set a day when they would start plowing, the day when they sow their seeds, the day they would harvest. And they raised like onions and flax and rye, potatoes, a little bit of potatoes, not too many. And then he would take this in the fall to Archangel or some other town. There were other towns there, but Archangel was the real city. And he would barter this stuff off and bring it back and then pass it out to the people, whatever they need.
How was the communications with the peasants?
How what?
How did you communicate with the peasants?
Well, we had interpreters. Polish people could learn the Russian quite easily. And I could do it pretty good too with my Danish. I could read my Danish, speak it too. I still can. And they had lots of words. They don't mean the same thing, but you might pronounce them the same. And then you find out, well, that means so and so.
Wow.
And they, actually, we learned their language much quicker than they could learn ours.
I imagine you were
for eating and eggs and potatoes and things like that. You would know each individual, so you could make some signs. And Katoski is a potato, What did they call an egg? I don't remember what an egg was, but I know it cost 50 cents, 5 rubles, and a ruble was worth a dime in those days. 5 rubles for one egg.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. Don't
do that today.
How do you feel about the whole expedition being shrouded in mystery? and that you just went out and fought and you weren't told why. How did that make you feel?
Well, it was my first experience in a war, so I guess I suppose that's the way it goes. I presume the same feeling the guy had went to France, although you knew all about France before our men went to France.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know anything about Russia when we went there.
I think I would wonder why I was fighting the person I was fighting.
Well, look, we weren't very old. We were maybe had a few oats to sow yet, and that's part of it.
Did you feel any bitterness about it afterwards at all?
You didn't feel any better about it afterwards?
Bitterness? Yeah.
Well, I always say it's a nice experience to have had, but I wouldn't want to do it over again. Not for the same reason, or in the same way. I have to believe that some of those people are still living like they did when we were there. No kinds of plumbing of any kind. They had wells to get water out of. And we weren't allowed to drink the water until somebody from the medical corps came and dumped the chlorine in it. Then it turned red when they put that in it. Then you were allowed to drink it. But on the other hand, the Russians all wore caps, hard caps, something like what the policemen wear.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're going through the woods, there's swamps all over. They just dip that cap down in the swamp and take a drink. They didn't die.
Probably immune. Is there anything else that you would like to add? Something that we've forgotten to question you about?
I don't know. I think you did a pretty good job.
Ran you over the coals, huh?
Well, at one time, you didn't ask about when you get, staying steady in a place for a short time, you keep sending out patrols. We send out a patrol. They send out a patrol. Finally, you get to where you begin to meet their patrol. We meet in the woods someplace, and you get to be not enemies but kind of friends. So we had a north of Tongass there, we had a thing like that going over there.
The Bolsheviks and you?
Yeah. We wouldn't just actually see them, but they'd put things in a tree, like a mailbox out there in the woods. And we would exchange our notices. They say, you join us, and then we'd tell them, well, they come and join us, so we wouldn't have to fight. And at Christmas time, they put a note in that they wouldn't bother us, they wouldn't fight us on our Christmas if we would leave them alone on their Christmas. And they held their word, but not us. We had to go and bother them on Christmas. Just go up to the line where they were stationed, shoot. Maybe try to burn a lockhouse.
How did that make you feel?
Not good.
No.
We didn't really do any good.
No.
But when you're told to do something in the army, you can do it, or something else happens to you.
Where would those orders come from? Your major?
No, this is just the privates that did that. Oh, no, the officers weren't supposed to know what was going on there. Some of them did.
No, I mean when you were told to go bother them on their Christmas.
Well, we didn't feel good about it, but we had to do it.
Because the officers told you to?
Sure. It wasn't our idea.
Yeah.
We didn't want to go at any time anyway. That's a dirty job. Lots of guys got shot up going on patrols. They could hide in the woods and stand behind a tree and they could see you and you don't know they're there. And boy, first thing you know, you had lost a guy.
Did you ever talk to the Bolsheviks?
Not out on the firing line.
Well,
some of these guys were taken prisoner, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as much as an American and a Russian can talk, it wouldn't be too much. But the British, they were usually the interpreters. You see, they outranked us in everything, every way.
How did you feel about that?
I didn't like it. Nobody else liked it. They don't like it today, even. I answered that question before.
That's right. I remember. So when you talk,
I couldn't say that I really hated them, but I would just soon have been with my own people all the time. They could be where they were, and we could be where we were. The Royal Scots weren't that bad, but they were. I felt sorry for those guys. They shouldn't have been there at all. I think when they sent them out of England, they thought they were going someplace for a rest. But they, they were the most cootiest guys, if you know what cooties are.
Mm-hmm.
They crawl around in your clothes. Mm-hmm. More if you take your clothes off, they don't bother you. And these guys, they claim that you'd see them sitting sometime at night, they're looking at their shirt and the cooties are going here and there. They get off your body and stay on the clothes. And he says, I'm training this guy here. Scotchman says, you know, sitting there watching and tell him, give him commands like you do to soldiers. So they have a little sense of humor too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that thing still going?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. You've had quite a lot to tell us, and it was just great.
Well, you should have come around 50 years ago. I could have told you.